So I just want to give a shout out to the division office for letting me use the studio.
Woo!
Yeah.
Before we move into chapter one, let me do a shout out for Sean Brace. Sean Brace wrote the foreword to this book. And Sean Brace is also a pastor and an author, author of the book, The Table I Long For, which is one of the best missional Adventist books ever. The Table I Long For is like the Letters to the Church by Francis Chan, but for Adventists. It's like the Adventist version of Francis Chan's Letters to the Church.
Where is he from again?
Sean Brace is from New England. So I don't remember exactly what state he's in, but he's somewhere in New England. But American. Yeah. And the book, The Table I Long For, man, you really got to get your hands on that book. That's an incredible book, beautiful book. And if you're thinking, hey, I would love to get a group of people together and just study this topic out and start something new, The Table I Long For is a fantastic book. Letters to the Church by Francis Chan, also a fantastic book. And of course, Hidden by Marcos Torres.
It's
a fantastic book. But Sean Brace wrote the foreword to the book. So I just want to give a shout out to Sean Brace. Thank you for writing a beautiful, beautiful foreword. And one of the things he mentions in the foreword, which I'm interested in hearing what you think about it. He gets given a church, and the elder tells him, if you preach the gospel here, you're going to upset people. So he preaches the gospel, but nobody gets upset. In fact, he says something really funny. He says that with every passing week, people just got more comatose. I thought that was very, very, like,
very, a little too real.
Yeah, very real, very real, and kind of comical at the same time, right? And then he says he preached a sermon series on sex, and that he got a little explicit at times. And looking back, he's like, I probably should have done that a little differently. But even then, nobody got upset. But it's when he started preaching about the church, the biblical vision for the church, that people started to get upset. And I don't know what you think about that, because like, that's definitely something that I have many stories about myself, in terms of, it's all cute and dandy until you actually start poking at the sacred cows, at the systems that we treat like the Ten Commandments, even though they're man-made, right?
Mm. Yeah, I think that's very important. And I don't think you guys have experienced as much of that as what we experienced in third world countries, especially in a system or a setting that has been through colonization.
Mm-hmm.
We've been colonized so much, especially by the Spaniards, that you never question leadership. You know, never question the priests. Mm. You never question the papacy, the pope, you know, the mother church. Mm. And so no one really goes and asks questions about religious leaders, because that's just wrong. You know, it's wrong to question a system. And so I grew up in a system where even a pastor has done something, the verse would automatically be, touch not the Lord's anointed. You know,
yep.
So when touch not Lord's anointed for us is you can never question. Mm. And so church is very vital here. And that's why if you start, I was joking about, hey, I'm going to talk about your book and you need to prepare, you need to be ready to open up your house for refugees from the Philippines. Because as soon as you start talking about church here in the Philippines, everyone's going to stone you, you know? And you cannot talk about the church.
Yeah. And so, look, I relate to that a bit because I grew up in a Latino church in the East Coast.
Yeah.
And Latino people, like my family is from Puerto Rico, were heavily colonized by the Spaniards as well. The Taínos were colonized by the Spaniards. And
you understand.
Here's the thing that blew my mind, bro. Here's the thing that blew my mind. Growing up in a colonized church, what you're dealing with, a lot of things that I didn't understand as a kid. one of the things that you're dealing with is the loss of identity and culture. That's what happens in colonization. You get deleted, you get erased, you get subsumed. It's kind of like when Nebuchadnezzar conquers Judea. He doesn't just conquer it. He wants to convert the Jews into Babylonians. That's colonization. Colonization is very different from conquest. Conquest is, I took over your land, now I'll leave you alone, just pay your taxes, right? Colonization is like, no, we're going to erase you. We're going to turn everyone into a version of us, right? And that's what happened in a lot of Latino cultures. The colonization of the Taínos, of the Arawakans, the indigenous peoples of the Caribbean, South Central America, etc. And what happens is now you have people whose identity has been erased, and that's a trauma. There's a trauma that comes with that. And this is when it really hit me, because having grown up in a church full of, you know, colonized people, they parrot the assumptions or the things the colonizers told them, and they don't question it. And it's very toxic, and it's very hierarchical, and it's very aggressive and very dramatic, right? There's just a lot of issues. And because, you know, Latino cultures, and I think it's very similar with Filipino cultures, we're also collective. We're not individualistic, we're collective. And so if you ask a question and your family is offended by it, or they, you know, they, what's the word I'm looking for? They react negatively to your question. It's not just you versus that one family member. The whole family is involved. It's a collective, right? And so it's very, very difficult to challenge norms that are unhealthy and unbiblical, because it's you against the world, literally, in a literal sense. So anyways, yeah, sorry to interrupt you, man, but I just wanted to sort of point that out. Like, I understand to some degree, although I'm not Filipino, so I'm sure there are nuances to your experience that I'll never understand, but there are some areas where I can definitely relate, having grown up in a Latino church.
Yeah, no. I think that I almost forgot you're a Latino. Say honest, I only listen to you and I, you know, forgot you're brown. So anyways. But anyways, I do understand, you know, I think Latinos and Filipinos have really, if you look at the way we do things, you know, we're Filipinos just basically Pacific Mexicans.
I never heard that phrase before.
It's true. We're Pacific Mexicans.
Oh my goodness.
So
Jasper
anyways.
Said it, you guys. Jasper said it.
It's a joke, but definitely the way we do things, I've talked to a lot of Latinos, you know, and the way you describe things, this is the same thing. You cannot ask questions to leadership. And that's why even my mild Facebook post, I get a lot of oh, you're very divisive. Mm. Oh, you're very thing. And it goes back to a way, I think, the way we deal with their families. And I'm sure you can relate to this as Latinos. In the Philippines, you cannot open up problems with the family. It's just pushed under the rug. You know, it's just, you don't talk about it. You don't ask hard questions. And the book, I tell you, this is a very challenging book for Filipinos. Because this is really challenging the very core of our church. And when we talk about church here, I grew up, and I would tell you, most of young people here in the Philippines, and I think most of the young people growing up in most of our churches around third world countries, the way we view church automatically is programs.
Mm.
Ask me, what is church? Automatically, divine service. AY, Sabbath school.
Yep.
That is church. And the way you talk about these things in your book, a challenging the system and the way we do programs at church, this is not just an attack to the whole system, but it's an attack to the church in the Philippines.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and this is how we view things here. And this is a very challenge. When Sean was talking in the foreword about how, you know, as long as you talk about traditions in the church, then that's where it gets icky.
Yeah. And you know, it was the same in Jesus' day, mm-hmm. You know, which is why he ran into such he butted heads so heavily with the religious leaders because Jesus refused. I love how Ellen White describes it in Desire of Ages. He refused to subsume himself. And I'm not using her exact words here. These are mine, but this is essentially what she's saying. He refused to subsume himself to their traditions, right? He just didn't follow them. It was like, nah, I'm not doing it, you know? And so, but from their perspective, that was what he was doing was insulting and sacrilegious, even though it wasn't, because the only rules he wasn't keeping was their rules. He kept every single one of God's rules, right? And that's one of the things I talk about in the book as well. It's like, we have become as a church really, really good at doing the things God never asked for while ignoring to do the things he has asked for. And we'll get to that later. But yeah, that foreword I thought was really spot on as well. And look, I don't know what would it be like to lead a grassroots like rebirth of the church in a context like the Philippines. I've been, even though I grew up Latino, I've been out of that world for a very long time. So, you know, I imagine that would be very tough there too. I do have some friends in New Jersey that started a church plant and they ended up having to just completely detach themselves from all the Latinos around them, including the leadership, because they just couldn't do it. They couldn't do anything without constantly being attacked. And I'm not talking like, oh, these are like, oh, they're just a group of anti-Trinitarians who just want, you know, like we all know like those toxic, you know, groups that want to go off and do their own thing. That's not what I'm talking about here. I can't stand that stuff. But we're just talking about people who just want to do mission, who just want to be creative, who just want to do something different to reach this generation. It's very, very hard. And the only thing that I could say is if you're listening to this and you're like, man, I want to be part of leading change in my local setting, is that, yeah, it probably will be very, very, very hard depending on where you are. I have friends as well who do my online school who are like from Poland and what's that other one? Croatia, very similar culture to what we're talking about here, there as well, you know, sort of very repressive and controlling fundamentalist old school type of culture. And it's hard, man. It's hard. But I hope that by the end of this podcast series, and especially if you've read the book, because we're not going to cover everything, but that you'll be like Jeremiah, who said, you know, Jeremiah quit because it was too hard to do the whole prophet thing. And then he writes, but there was this fire in my bones and I couldn't contain it. So he went back. He was like, I got to speak the word, man. I got to do this thing. This fire is too intense. And I really pray that for this generation, that there would be a fire in our bones for the thing that God is doing in the world today. That's so intense that even the difficulties that come with leading and with challenging some of these calcified structures that are unhealthy, even the challenges that come with that won't deter us. So anyways, yeah, that's all, you know, sort of my thoughts on the foreword, but yeah, shout out to Sean. Thank you.
Powerful stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. So chapter one. Now we get into chapter one. I don't know. I talk too much. I'll lead chapter one, Jasper. What do you think?
I think you're muted. This is a powerful chapter. I think this is a very good one to just introduce, you know, the whole chapter and system. And, you know, you talk about that mystery. Mm. And I was like, man, this mystery that Paul talked about. Now, let me ask you, why did you start with this one? Yeah, what's with the whole mystery thing? And of course, I mean, I'm very careful to not spoil the whole thing. So we're just going to talk. I feel like, where I'm walking in eggshells.
No, you can spoil. It's okay. We can throw spoilers. It's all good. So I decided to start
with this mystery one. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So I decided to start with this for two reasons. Number one, I wanted the book to really begin and end with scripture. I didn't want it to be a Marcus rant. I wanted it to be rooted in scripture. And number two, because my own journey to discovering what church really is, really begins here. And I talk about in the chapter, so like I was part of a local church that was studying the book of Ephesians. And I had to go home 1 week. And one of the questions in the study group was, you know, Paul talks about this great mystery that's been hidden in the heart of God. What is the mystery? And so I had to study Ephesians and answer the questions and then come back to the study group to say, this is my answer, you know? So I was studying Ephesians that week and, you know, I'm reading and reading and I'm like, what is this mystery that Paul speaks of? And I talk about it in the chapter just in more detail. But basically the bottom line is I realized, okay, the mystery that Paul speaks of is the church. So I wrote that down on my sheet of paper and brought it to the lesson. Never thought about it again. Well, I mean, I did eventually, but not for a long time. And here's the thing, like it didn't do anything for me. Like I was like, oh, okay. Like once I put all the pieces together, I was like, Paul is speaking of the church. And it didn't impact me. I didn't think anything of it. I was just like, all right, cool. And so years later, as I'm rethinking this idea, like it just kind of hits me. It's like, look at what Paul is saying here in Ephesians. He's saying that this mystery has been hidden in the heart of God for generations. And only now has it been made known. Like whatever this thing is, this is a big deal, bro. You know, this isn't just like, and I use the example, there's a TV show that I like called Blacklist. I don't know if anyone here, I don't know if you've ever seen it. It's kind of a cheesy like FBI show, but I like it, you know, and it's 10 seasons long. And
not my generation.
No, definitely not. No, it's about 10 seasons long or exactly 10 seasons long. And, one of the key plot lines is that there's a character who has a secret and he's the main character in the show. And he's got this secret that he's kept. And season one, you don't find out what the secret is. Season two, season three, season four, season five. And it just strings you along. Every season drops like one or two tiny little hints as to what it could be, but it never fully answers the question. And I remember leaning over to my wife by about the eighth or ninth season of this. And I said to her, man, they've strung us along with this dumb secret for a long time, dude. Whatever it is, like it better be good. Like this guy better be like an alien or something. You know, like this is, you know, like if it turns out the secret is something cheesy and whack, like it was such a letdown, you know, because for 9 seasons, you still don't know what the secret is, you know? That's 9 years of watching a TV show, you know. Now, this is the point that I make, like, forget 9 years, bro. The secret that Paul is talking about that God has kept hidden in his heart for thousands of generations, man. This thing has been hidden. He hasn't revealed it. It's been tucked away. It's like clandestine, bro. Like, you know, and only now has it been made known. And then, you know, when you read that the secret is the church, I was just like, oh, okay, cool. And I moved on. And years later, I thought back, I was like, wait a minute, that doesn't make any sense. Why wasn't I amazed? Right? Paul's amazed. He's like, yo, it's been revealed, man. And it hasn't been revealed. Like we didn't figure out what the secret was by theologizing and philosophizing. No, we figured out what the secret was because God supernaturally revealed it through Christ and his spirit, right? Like that's how we know what the secret was. It's so powerful. It had to be revealed. We couldn't engineer this thing on our own, right? Even with the whole Old Testament corpus, we couldn't figure out what it was. God had to step in through the Spirit and reveal this is the secret. And it turns out the secret is the church. And I wasn't amazed. I was just like, meh, cool. Wrote my little answer down, moved on.
Can I say something about this one?
Yeah.
You've asked. And one of the words here says that you if you ask me to think of a list of words to describe the church, I could have chosen many positive terms, but one word I would never thought would be mystery. Mm-hmm. I think everyone relate to this because especially me, you know, especially growing up, describing the church as program, of course, it will never be a mystery. Mm. What in the world? That's so cheap.
Yeah,
like mystery.
Yeah,
that's it. Sabbath school, divine, AY, that's mystery.
Yeah.
And I think you've said this in your words, like, man, the reason why I think it's not mystery is because everything is just, you've used Francis Chan's words here, predictable.
Mm. Absolutely. Yeah. Like here's the actual quote from Pastor Chan. And this is, you know, I start wrestling in the chapter with why wasn't I amazed? Why aren't we amazed? You know,
or why isn't that a mystery for us?
That's right. Yeah. You know, and I said, well, I started to realize that the reason why I wasn't amazed is because when I read that Paul was talking about the church, this one body, in my mind automatically went to, oh, the event, the program at the building that I go to every Sabbath for a few hours. And I stand up and I sit down at the prescribed moments and I keep quiet and I listen to a sermon and then I have some potluck and maybe a few chats with people and then I go home. Maybe there's a youth hike after, you know, and that's it. And it's like, there's nothing mind-blowing about that. I mean, I liked it. It's not like I had a bad experience with it, right? Like sometimes like I challenge the church and people think, oh, Marcus must hate the church. He had a really bad experience. Actually, no, I've had a great experience with the church. I never... never for one moment sat back and thought, I hate this. I despise this. You know, when it's like, I would have chosen, if you asked me to describe the church, I would have chosen a lot of really nice terms. Oh, I like it. You know, I like a good sermon. I love going and seeing my friends and singing, you know, and I love all that stuff. But I wasn't amazed by it. I wasn't awed by it. I wasn't in any way, shape or form, just like in awe of what the church was. And Francis Chan, this is the quote that you mentioned today. I think Francis Chan answers the reason why. He says, church today has become predictable. You go to a building, someone gives you a bulletin, you sit in a chair, you sing a few songs, a guy delivers, maybe a polished message, pardon, maybe not. Someone sings a solo, you go home. Is that all God intended for us? And that's the bit that really, really hit me because, and this is what I write in the book, if the mystery that God had hidden for thousands of generations turns out to be nothing more than a blueprint for a Sabbath morning program that we run on repeat week after week, then I have to admit that's a really colossal letdown. That's worse than any letdown that Blacklist, you know, with their
well, well, well.
Yeah, yeah. It's like, wow, what a letdown, man. It's and that's what it's like. Is this what you kept hidden for so long, bro? Like, this is it. You know, like, so hold on. Time out. Hold on. So God in the Old Testament, he's like raining fire down from heaven and, you know, parting the Red Sea and toppling giants, you know, like just all these crazy, like all of this is a precursor, a hint, a small sneak peek at this great mystery that he's going to unfold at the, you know, in the future after the death of Jesus, and that all of this, you know, pillar of fire by night, cloud by day, and, you know, the sun standing still as, you know, the Israelites were in battle, like all of this is leading up to this great mystery. And it turns out the great mystery is the building with the program. Hey everyone, it is Pastor Marcus here with a quick announcement slash interruption. I know you're really enjoying the episode, but I've got some things that I want to share with you before we return to our conversation. The first one is, if you are listening to this podcast series and you're thinking to yourself, I really want to be part of the change in the church, then the good news is there's a way to do that, guys. There's a way to actually step in, get equipped, get trained, get empowered, and go out and be the change you wish to see in the church, because I have an online school and it's really, really affordable. All you have to do is go to thestorychurchproject.com and under the training tab, click on online school. And there you're going to be invited to join an online school called The Mission Collective. On this online school, there are already over 30 videos exploring topics like mission, theology, engaging postmoderns, sharing the gospel with emerging generations who've never been to church, articulating the gospel for the technological shifts that are coming in the next 10 to 20 years, and even training sessions on how you, without a degree, without any money, can start your own missional community, building the kingdom of God in your city. And the only thing you need for it to work is the fire of mission burning in your bones. So if you are tired of just talking about change and longing for change and dreaming for change in the church, and you want to be part of the change, head over to thestorychurchproject.com. On the training tab, click the online school link,
and all the instructions are there. Just look around, you guys. The world is imploding on itself. The time for talk has finished. The time for I wish has finished. It's time for a new generation to get to work building the kingdom of God.
Okay, I don't know how to say this, but we've made this system so unattractive that young people are going to church out of obligation or a fear of hell. So we have a system that we've created that is so irrelevant, that is so irrelevant in our generation, that the only thing, and it might not be true to everyone, I'm sorry if I'm generalizing, but most of the times, young people or our people are going to our programs out of shame, fear, or guilt. I have yet to ask a young person so excited about what we do in Sabbath and say, I'm stoked, let's go. I can't wait to sing holy, holy, holy. I'm not throwing shade at our church, but that's just the reality. As a church leader, someone said, the first work of a leader is to identify reality. So you say either we do the Filipino thing and put it under the rug, or we face the reality that one of the reasons why we keep the people are just doing church is because out of guilt, shame, and fear.
100% agree, man. There's a statement from the Fuller Youth Institute to the effect of the church today is perfectly calibrated for a world that no longer exists. And I think that's the reality. And I think we all recognize that. And the question is, what do we do about it? And so this is the challenge, right? I'm going to give you a scenario or an illustration that's not in the book. Oh, I mean, it might be. I don't know. I can't remember. I've been working on this thing for like 3 years, so I can't remember what's in it anymore. But okay, so I want you to imagine the church in three different layers. A heartbeat, which is the mission of the church. It's why. A muscle, which is the structure of the church. That's its how it does something with its why, how it moves, how it functions, how it does its mission. And then your cosmetic, so your aesthetics, right? That's the what the church looks like, what its culture is like, what it's, you know, what it presents itself like to the world. And here's the challenge that I've noticed. If you think of the church that way, heartbeat, its mission, muscle, its structure, cosmetics, what it looks like, its culture. Here's the challenge. At some point, the church lost its heartbeat. It forgot its mission. It forgot its identity, right? Because the church loses its heartbeat, its mission, it no longer has a reason to exist. I noticed this in every single church I worked in, Jasper, without fail. I would visit, one of the first things I would do is I would visit every leader on the first year, and I would ask them, why does your church exist? I would visit them individually, and I would ask them, why does this church exist? And all of them would give me a different answer, which means none of them knew why it existed. And some of them would resort to theological platitudes because it sounds like the right thing to say, and others would give their personal agenda. Very few would look me in the eye and say, I don't actually know. And those were the ones I made my best friends because they were honest, right? But, you know, most of our churches don't know why they're there. They don't have a mission, right? They might have a generalized understanding of mission, but they don't know mission in their context, in their city, in their neighborhood. They don't know why they're there, right? So they have no heartbeat. What happens when a church has no heartbeat is that its muscle begins to atrophy, right? Now, just imagine a human being with heart failure, heart problems. If the heart's not pumping enough oxygen into your muscles get weak. they begin to atrophy. I saw a documentary about a bodybuilder, really big muscles, a big guy. He'd used a lot of steroids, and he used so much he had a heart attack. Right now he was still really buff, but he could barely lift any weights. And he would go for a walk on the beach, and after about 2 or 3 minutes, he was out of breath. Right, and he was trying to rehabilitate himself, but the point is, his heart was so sick that even though he still had really large muscles from years of training and years of steroid abuse, he had no strength. Right, he was like curling 20-pound dumbbells, bro. He had like his biceps were bigger than my head, and he could only curl like a 20-pound dumbbell. So this is what happens to many of our churches. Their heart is sick. They have no mission. There's no heartbeat. So the muscle atrophies. What happens when the muscle atrophies? What do I mean by muscle in the local church setting? Your elders, your departments, your deacons. That's your structure, right? That's the structure. Your board, your business meeting. When you don't have a heartbeat, those atrophy. All of a sudden, you have a departmental model that's not functioning. You have business meetings where people argue about the dumbest stuff, right? And I've seen it time and time again. The arguments at business meetings, bro. Like, seriously, we should weep. We should weep. I think angels weep, bro. Like, for real. You know, like, I think they stand there like, oh, you know that verse in Habakkuk, how long, Lord, must I cry violence and you do not answer? I just picture the angels like, how long, Lord? These people. So it's like, but that's a symptom. You know, like Bible says, without vision, my people perish. You know? And so when you don't have a heartbeat as a church, your muscle atrophies. And when your muscles atrophied, it becomes insular and you're just bickering and fighting. And all you think about is inReach, right? Because you have no mission. So for all the inReach aficionados, right? And so then what happens to your cosmetics? That's your culture. Your culture becomes toxic. It becomes negative. It becomes a holy huddle. It becomes a community where only people who already agree with us feel like they belong. And worst of all, it loses touch with its outer environment, which is why you can walk into a local church today and it feels like you stepped back 100 years, right? It's a culture that is out of touch with its surroundings. Now, here's the problem. Along comes a very well-meaning pastor, and he sees this in the church, and he says, man, the youth are really disengaged. We need to do something to keep the youth. So here's what we're going to do. We're going to change the music. We're going to change the dress code. We're going to put a coffee bar in the foyer, and we're going to make church really fun and really hip. Now, all well-meaning, you know, he's very well-meaning in these plans, and this has happened over the years. But here's the problem with that. The problem with that is all you've done is change the cosmetics. But the cosmetics aren't the problem. The problem is the heartbeat. The church has no heartbeat. All you did is change the cosmetics, man. And I've seen this because I've worked in contemporary churches. I've been to many contemporary churches. That plan lasts for a few months until your young people realize this is the same dead church. It's the same pig with different lipstick, right? It's the same dead church, but it just looks prettier. It's just been repackaged, but it's the same problems. The same. It's just as irrelevant. It's just as pointless. Yeah, your music sounds more like updated music, and, you know, happy about that because I was tired of singing heritage singers. But, you know, it's the same. There's nothing different really happening here. And when you think about the life of millennials and Zeds today, the insane hours that they have to work, the condition of the economy, life is very, very busy for younger generations today. I don't actually know how long our society can keep up the level of busyness that we currently experience. People work very long hours, and long gone are the days where just one person could work. You need two incomes, man, just to survive, you know? And even with two incomes, you can't afford a house. You know, you can't get into the housing market. Like, it's insane. And then on top of that, you add the level of radical innovation that's happening in the tech industry and in the entertainment industry. And you have these young people who are like, they don't have time to waste, man. They ain't got time to waste. And they're going to come to your church, and it doesn't matter if it's contemporary or traditional. If your church doesn't have a heartbeat, it ain't worth my time. It really isn't. And so what I challenge leaders, and I've seen this, man, I've been to so many like meetings where pastors are like, how are we going to keep the youth in the church? And they start throwing out ideas. Oh, you know, we should get rid of the chairs and add round tables. Those are cool. And I'm just like, dude, please shut up. Like, you know, like here's the thing. None of that's bad. I'm not a conservative. Like if you want to have, you know, worship Hillsong with lights and smoke and round tables, I don't care. Like go nuts, have fun, do it to the glory of God. But if you think that that's going to revive your church, you're dead wrong, man. That's not where it's at. The only way that our churches can be relevant is if we go back to heartbeat. We have to go back to heartbeat. Why are we here? What's our mission? And we have to live. We have to live a life of radical obedience to that mission. Anything short of that is just it's just makeup, man. It's like taking a person with heart disease who's very pale and sickly, and you just put lots of makeup on them so they look healthy. They're still dying. You know what I mean? It's like they need heart surgery, dude. They don't need makeup. And this is what we do in our churches, you know, like they need heart surgery and we're just slapping makeup on them. And so my challenge is like, nah, dude, we got to get back to the heartbeat. And that's really what this book's about. It's like, what is our identity? Why are we here? Why did God do the whole church thing? Why does he call it a mystery? You know, why is it a big deal at all? You know, why should I care? And when you read the story of scripture and you peel it, you're like, you sit there and you see the story that God is telling all the way. And we go all the way back to Abraham in this book, man. We work our way forward because the story of the church begins with Abraham and works his way forward. And when you see it, you're just like, I don't even know that we could, we won't be able to summarize it in this podcast series. It's just, it's too grand. It's too big, you know? But when you see it, it's like, whoa, man, what we have gone so far and we are missing so much. And it's the bad theology that's causing us to miss so much because we've come to believe that church is a building, that church is a program, that church is over there. And so long as we believe that, we will never see the incredibly beautiful, mysterious thing that God is doing. Anyways, I'm talking too much, bro. But yeah, that's my answer to the
to that question.
Hey guys, one quick announcement before the episode wraps up. At the end of this series, there's just a few episodes left, about three episodes left, and at the end, we are going to record a special Q&A episode. So if you have questions that you want us to answer in our Q&A episode, I want you to email them to Pastor Marcos, not Marcus, Marcos, M-A-R-C-O-S, Pastor Marcos, at thestorychurchproject.com. Email all your questions from this podcast series there, and we will answer them in our final episode.